to you. Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks very much for coming along. God, the great designer. There's some things that we can be fairly certain about, things that we know about. We know that we live as part of a huge universe, and the more scientific work that's done on this universe, the greater it appears to be. It's an astonishing amount of material there in the universe, and we're just one little part of it, our Earth. Not only do we know that we live in a great universe, there's an amazing variety of living things which interact in a very complex way, which live on the Earth, aren't there? There's loads of plants, all sorts of different species of plants, which we, hundreds of thousands of them, apparently. Similarly, a similar range of animals. We know this is actually the case because we're living in it. It's around us all the time. We know that these things exist. Man, who is probably the summit of this collection of living beings upon the earth. The question is, how did it all come about? Why is it here? And that is really what we want to address this morning. Why do we find such a wonderful collection of objects, living things, plants, animals on the earth in which we live? Now, this is a Bible talk, as you know, and our expertise is in Bible study. It's not in the theories of men. We're going to refer to some of the theories of men in a moment, but really, we're Bible students. And so we're going to give the Bible perspective of the answer to that question. Why is everything here? How did it get here? Now, we just read this wonderful psalm together, actually. And this is actually, the words on the screen there are from the English Standard Version. So there aren't any these and thous in it. But it says the same things. That by the word of the Lord, the heavens were made. So that's a pretty all-embracing statement, isn't it? That's how it came about. That's what the Bible is saying. By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, the breath of his mouth, all their host. He gathers the waters of the sea as a heap. He puts the deeps in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord therefore. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. And that psalm that we just read continues in that theme, doesn't it? That everything is here because of a designer, because of the Lord. And in fact, it's because of his word. And in fact, if you look, go right back to Genesis chapter 1, we read that as God spoke and said, let there be light, and so on. So it was through this word of the Lord, this command of God. And this is the Bible perspective of why everything is here. Here's another reference. This is from Proverbs, and it's pointing out that it's not just the heavens, the inanimate bodies within the universe are due to the Lord, the word of the Lord, but also all these creatures upon it. So the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord hath made them both. So all these living organisms the Lord has made. This is the same Lord, Yahweh, that's made these things. Now, we want to just start with two definitions, just as we analyse this question. How did all this come about? Why is everything here in the way we see it? So we've just looked at what the scriptures say, what the Bible says, and it's clearly the explanation of why things are here is because they were created by some mind or other, described as the Lord, in the Psalms there. Now, the living world was actually created by an intelligent designer, or a planner, God in fact, who created each species separately. So that's one definition, that's one way in which, one explanation of how things could have arrived, and it's the explanation we read in the scriptures. Now, of course, not everybody is happy to believe that there is a supreme being and that he has written his mind in the word, which we call the scriptures, the Bible. And so there's an alternative hypothesis presented. This is an alternative explanation for all these living things, plants, animals. It is that they occurred spontaneously by a process of evolution. And just to express that more in more detail, the living world developed from very simple beginnings to its present complexity, no doubt about the complexity, by a very large number of very small changes arising by a completely random processes. There's no intelligence involved in this process. These things are just dictated by chance and random happenings which create the, or to use perhaps a wrong word, which do allow for a development of living things from a lower to a higher level of complexity. Now, how is it supposed to work? Now, we will look very briefly at it. I say we're not experts in this, but it is possible just to understand it at its very basic level, which is all we can do with our present qualifications. It's a combination of random mutation, things that happen at random, to a very large number of cases, and then natural selection, where the random things that have happened, some of them a bit better than others, and so they tend to get perpetuated. These two things work together. This is the theory. These two things work together, and there is some validity in it, as we shall see. Let's just take an example of how this works. This is a famous case. This is often cited, the so-called peppered moth, which was quite a bright colour in the first place. During the days of the Industrial Revolution, these moths were rather conspicuous because a lot of stuff went black because of all the smoke and coal and so on that was used. And then some of them, by chance, were a little bit darker than others. There's a slightly darker one. This is the theory. And the ones that were a little bit darker survived in more cases than the ones that were lighter, because other creatures couldn't see them. And so the next generation, there were a few more dark ones, because there were more of them, because they survived. The next generation, even more of them. The next generation, even more of them. And until finally, all peppered moths were dark in colour. And that's an example that is often quoted of evolution. And it is a sort of evolution. And you can see that it does work, that there is a random mutation, which is what happened to this one here, which was then perpetuated because more of those who had that particular feature survived, and therefore they gave rise to a larger number in the future. So you can see that it does work, but notice the importance of this pathway. There needs to be a pathway, that is, there needs to be a progression, however small, between one state of affairs and the next state of affairs. And the difference between one step and the next step, there needs to be an advantage, definite advantage. In this case, the advantage was that they were more effectively camouflaged so that they survived more. Oh, that's where they all end up black. Now, there are arguments amongst scientists, amongst people who are qualified, unlike myself, and unlike most of us, I think, here. There are arguments among scientists about how much this process can actually achieve. And we want to consider the reasoning of a Professor Michael Behe. He's a professor of biological science at Lehigh University in the States. And he did some very analytical work on just how much this process of natural selection and random mutation, how much it could achieve, and how long it would likely to take. He did a lot of work on malaria. This was a special study of his. He was studying malaria and the way it could be prevented. Well, malaria, as you probably know, is caused by mosquito bites. Mosquitoes inject a bacteria, it's a parasite actually, into the body. And this parasite gets into the bloodstream. It finds a red blood corpuscle, gets into it, feeds on it, reproduces, they feed on it, until it destroys the red blood corpuscle. And then they break out, and then each one of them then goes for another red blood corpuscle until the blood's all used up. It's horrible. However, it was found that there was a drug which was effective in limiting the ability of this parasite to reproduce. It's called chloroquine. Chloroquine was looked like a tremendous achievement. This was the way to prevent malaria. But unfortunately, it only was effective for about 10 years. Only 10 years it worked. Why? Well, because the malaria parasite developed a resistance to chloroquine. Now, we know that this happens, don't we? We know that a lot of antibiotics are becoming less and less effective because the bacteria that they're combating become resistant. And how do they become resistant? Well, they become resistant by developing features quite at random, which then make them more resistant to the drug or whatever it is that's attacking them. It's the same as the peppered moth, really. It's a random development. And in fact, in these days now, because there's a lot of the development of microbiology, so scientists can see what these random variations actually are that have achieved the resistance. Some drugs actually last for a lot shorter time than 10 years. And what was found was that in the case of the parasite, the malaria parasite, there were two simultaneous changes in the amino acid sequence in the parasite's DNA. You don't need to understand all this. Two simultaneous changes, not just one. Where only a single change occurs and is necessary to produce resistance, then a drug is effective for a much shorter time. But in this case, you have to have two coincident changes. And now the only way you could get these two coincident changes happening is if you've got a huge number of organisms, a huge number of parasites. And then the probability that you get these two things happening together is higher. Okay, that's just saying that there's much more chance of a single change happening than two at once, and that's why some drugs are less effective than others, and they last for a shorter time. So we've got these two random changes in the amino acid sequence that occur by virtue of this very large number of organisms that have been produced. And this Professor Behe started to work out, well, how many organisms were there? How many did it need to produce these two simultaneous changes? And he worked out, well, he said the number of malarial cells in one sick person is, that's a million million. A shorthand way of writing a million million is 10 to the 12. That's the 12 there is the number of noughts. So a million million, so a million is six noughts, isn't it? And then a million million is 12 noughts. So the number of malarial cells in one sick person is about 10 to the 12. That's a lot. And the number of people who catch malaria each year is about 10 million. So that's 10 to the 7. So you're going to multiply those two numbers together and you get the number of malaria cells in 10 years. You multiply that by 10 as well, of course. And it's 10 to the 20. That is 20 noughts. That's a huge number, isn't it? An enormous number of malaria cells. And that's why, with such a huge number, there's a chance of these simultaneous two changes happening. If there weren't such a large number, then the chance is much less, isn't it? And that's how the random selection aspect of it works. He took this number of cells to achieve resistance by random mutation. So he thought, well, all right then. So what happens if we apply that to more complex beings like man? Well, let's just compare that with the number of human beings. Now, we're going to take these figures are not what we believe, really. They're figures that are believed by those who accept the theory of evolution. But we'll take those figures for the minute, because that's what we're looking at how valid that might be. Well, it's reckoned that there's about a trillion, that's 10 to the 12, 12 noughts, human creatures that are supposed to have existed since the split from the chimpanzee, because as we know, human beings and chimpanzees are very similar in many ways. And it is thought that there was a common ancestor, and the chimpanzee came from that, we came from the same common ancestor. That's the theory. And it's in the last 10 million years. So it's thought that there were 10 to the 12, 10 million million human creatures that existed in the last 10 million years. And that's quite a generous estimate. That's quite a lot of people. But notice, 10 to the 12 is a lot smaller than 10 to the 20. 10 to the 20 is 20 noughts, 10 to the 12 is 10 noughts. It's by a factor of 10 to the 8, which is a very large number. And this really means that the chances of primates leading to the human population ever achieving the same mutation or a mutation of the same complexity as that which produced resistance to chloroquine is 1 in 100 million. So that's the chances of a human being using this natural selection and random mutation method, which is clearly applicable in some cases, trying to apply that to the development of complexity in human beings. The chance that, that in view of the number of individuals that have lived during that time, or are supposed to have lived during that time, the chances that they could develop this relatively simple feature, these two random variations, coincident variations, is 1 in 100 million. In other words, essentially zero. So the conclusion that Michael Behe came to, so it's not our conclusion, it's the conclusion of the scientists here, that it's inconceivable that random mutation plus natural selection could have produced all the differences between men and chimpanzees. Because they were only talking about one very minute difference. Here we're talking about a whole host of differences between chimpanzees and man, Homo sapiens, if you like. That was his conclusion. I mean, another way of looking at it, work this out, another way of looking at it, how long would you need in order to have enough human beings to develop that level of complexity, that pair of random variations? And it turns out to be 71 million times the age of the universe. Assuming that the universe is 13.8 billion years old, which again is only a scientific assumption, we don't know it for certain. But even just taking the figures of scientists, you need 71 million times the age of the universe to get enough human beings to develop that simple twin random variation. It's absolutely inconceivable, isn't it? And that's the point he's making. He's making, well, however it happened, it wasn't this way. That's his conclusion. Now, the other thing that he pointed out was that malaria cells, once chloroquine has been withdrawn because it didn't seem to be working, the malaria cells went back to their original form. So actually, this twin variation in the amino acid sequence wasn't really an advantage except when there was chloroquine around. And in normal circumstances, in other words, it hadn't gone to a higher form of life, it had gone to a slightly lower form of life. They'd not evolved a higher form, it's actually a lower form. I think I'm getting a bit short of time. I need to go a little bit quicker. There's many mechanisms in life that only work if everything's there, like the ear. It doesn't work unless it's got the whole of it. It's got the eardrum, the little hammer thing, and a complex cochlea. Everything has to be there for it to work. And you have to have a pathway to get from one to the other. And it's really hard to imagine a pathway that would lead to complex forms. And this is why this movement started of irreducible complexity, the design movement, which actually Michael Behe started. Now, Richard Dawkins, who was a famous atheist, he believes that one day science will reveal the ways that such pathways were achieved, and he accuses us of worshipping gaps, but it's not a gap, it's a yawning chasm, isn't it? We've seen just how big a chasm it is, looking at the numbers. There's a scientist, this is a relatively recent statement, a lot of work have been done on the human genome, And here's the computer scientist that worked on it. And this is what he says. And I think it's just interesting in the context of our subject. He said, we're deliciously complex at the molecular level. We don't understand ourselves yet, which is cool, he says. There's still a metaphysical, magical element. What really astounds me is the architecture of life. The system is extremely complex. It's like it was designed, he said. There's a huge intelligence there. I don't see that as being unscientific. Others may, but not me. It's an interesting statement. That's the man who's worked on the human genome development. Now, not only is it, this is another remarkable thing. Not only is there this amazingly complex function that human organisms have, they've also got to have built into them a method of reproducing themselves, which is another great complexity, another gap. And we need even more blind faith to fill that gap. But God doesn't ask us to have blind faith, does he? This is a quotation from Isaiah chapter 48, and it's one that refers to the ability of God to foresee things that will happen in the future and to reveal them to man so that he might believe. He says, I know that you are obstinate, that your neck is an iron sinew, your forehead brass, he says. I declared them to you from old, before they came to pass, as events. I announced them to you, lest you should say, my idol did them, my carved image and my metal image commanded them. You have heard, now see all this, and will you not declare it? From this time forth I announced to you new things, hidden things that you had not known. They are created now. They weren't predictable. They are created now, not long ago. Before today, you have never heard of them, lest you should say, behold, I knew them. That's an interesting statement in there, isn't it? They are created now. So there are some things that are not predictable, and it's been discovered quite recently that there are things that, like that. It's called chaos theory. There are certain things you cannot predict, and in fact, God does them. God does things that men can't predict, but God can reveal them as evidence that he is there, that he is a God, that he is the designer. Now, I just want to show you a quick video, just to illustrate. I'm sorry about the wording, but this isn't my wording. But it just illustrates the. Let's have a look. See. Oh, blow. Let's go back. You might not like the accent in this either. Yeah, it's going. There's also some Dutch writing at the bottom, but there's an English commentary. This is about electric motors. Bacteria, very simple creatures. Okay, I think that's just fascinating, that in the simplest creature, you've got a really complex machine, and all the cogs in that machine, they're all proteins that have the right shape to do the job. Doesn't it scream design? How can things like that just come into being by a process of random mutations and chance? And I think that the more detailed, the harder scientists look at these so-called simple creatures, the more complexity they can recognise. So, if we ask the question, which is most likely, that the universe, that the Earth and the man came into being by chance, this process of chance, or by an intelligent designer? Well, we think the answer is obvious. It's really hard, I think, to imagine that the wonderful universe and world in which we live came into being by chance. And it really does cry out that there is a designer, there is an intelligent being behind all this. And this intelligent being is the God that we worship. Thank you very much for listening.